Hello, good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Fair Cop podcast. I'm Sarah Phillimore, and I'm very pleased tonight to welcome two special guests, Kate Harris and Fatina Leeser, who are going to be talking to us about the Joja Carter principles. Not merely is Joja Carter the second most important city in Indonesia, but it's also the birthplace of a very important document that probably far too many of us have very little idea or none at all about what it means and what its implications are. So tonight our two speakers are going to help dispel any of that confusion. We're going to discuss how this came into being and what its consequences are for those of us who believe in sex, not gender. So very pleased to welcome Kate Harris from the LGB Alliance. Kate has a degree in politics from the University of Sussex. She spent the early years of her career working with Women's Aid UK, and this was followed by a move to the corporate sector, lastly as VP Global Business Partnerships American Express. And she co-founded the LGB Alliance with Bev Jackson. And our second speaker is also a member of the LGB Alliance. It's Fatina Leeser. She has been a lifelong campaigner for women's rights and now works with various women's organisations. And hopefully the two of them are going to help dispel some of the confusions, uncertainties, and indeed complete lack of knowledge about the Joja Carter principles and why they are so important. Because certainly, speaking for myself, I'd never even heard of them until about 2 years ago. And now the little that I do know makes me profoundly uneasy. So we're going to assume a lack of knowledge from our listeners. So apologies if this is teaching you stuff you already know. And I'm going to ask our two speakers to first help us understand what is it that's causing us so much unease and alarm. It's about this conflation of sex and gender, isn't it? Why is that something that causes both of you concern?
Well, I think one of the problems with the, we'll call them YP, and there's not just one set of YP, but there's two. There's YP that was put together in 2006, which was the first set of principles. And then there was YP plus 10, which were actually adopted in 2017, which are even crazier than the originals. I think we often say that the pathway to hell is paved with good intentions, and we can definitely apply that to YP. In 2006, a group of people got together. If you actually look on the website about YP, it describes a distinguished group of international human rights experts. Well, they may have been distinguished, but they've been distinguished by the chaos that they've wreaked, unfortunately. They decided to have a set of international principles which related to sexual orientation and gender identity. So therein we have the problem. Let's think about 2006. We know that one of the original authors of the original YP has now changed his mind and deeply regrets the results of what was a very well-intentioned exercise. He has explained that in 2006, and actually quite often now, sex and gender are used interchangeably. And when they wrote the original YP, they used the terms sex and gender interchangeably. Now, why is that a problem? Let's go straight into how does this affect us today. Let's look at what's happening with international rugby, shall we? This is a cause dear to the heart of LGB Alliance because World Rugby has conducted a serious scientific review back in February to look at women's rugby and to look at the question of whether male-bodied individuals who are trans women should be allowed to play. And the science tells us that people who've been through male puberty increase the risk of injury to biological women if they're playing rugby by between 25 and 30%. Now, gender identity theorists tell us that trans women are women and they should be allowed to play against biological women. And this is a campaign that's live right now because Stonewall is described today in the Daily Mail as a trans lobby group is actively campaigning against World Rugby. World Rugby hasn't issued its report yet, but it's been leaked. And each rugby union in each country in November will have to vote on this issue of women's rugby. And we say put the safety of women first. There are plenty of lesbians who enjoy rugby. But this is one example of the conflation of sex and gender, because not only is it biologically incorrect, but the implications of it are it poses a danger to women in sport. It confuses children. I don't know whether you know that now people who are same-sex attracted, homosexuals, LGB Alliance, we are transphobic if we exclude male-bodied trans women from our dating pool and relationships and sex. So this is another practical example of when you conflate sex and gender, because many groups now say trans women are women. That is a mantra. And therefore, if you don't want to have relationships with them, you're transphobic. We strongly object to that, and we campaign against that. We know that lesbians now have nowhere to go. Young lesbians growing up are told that their sex doesn't matter. They're probably trans if they don't conform to 1950s gender stereotypes. I was speaking to someone in the US yesterday who said, if you walk through San Francisco at the moment, go down the Castro, there's not a single butch dyke hanging out in any of the bars, because they are generally, the popular theory in California is that if you're a butch dyke, you're actually a bloke. So this is all part of what is the result of the theory that's been presented as best practice in the YP.
So let me get this straight. This document, which you said has undergone some revisions since it was originally written, now very firmly states that it is gender, not sex, that is important. And that's leading to all sorts of problems. You did that, given a very clear outline with regards to rugby. Can you tell us then a little bit more about how did this happen? How did it develop? I mean, what was it like initially as a set of principles? How did we get from there to here?
The YP, Joe Jakarta Principles, they didn't just appear. Before that, there was campaigning by certain individuals, Kate will go a little bit more into that later, that were promoting ideas around gender identity. So there was something called the International Bill of Transgender Rights in 1995. So quite a while before the YP, and yeah, those ideas and some of the language is in the YP. So you could say that the YP has come out of decades of covert campaigning, I have to say, and we can speak a little bit more about that. We have some examples of the types of campaigning tactics that have been used and why lots of us weren't aware of what was taking place.
So what's really interesting for me as a lawyer, I understand that these principles have got no legal standing, and yet they appear to be relied upon, cited, written about. They're some kind of human rights instrument on a par with, say, the UN Convention or the European Convention. So how did that happen?
It's interesting you should say that. I've been looking at an article. It's actually an interview with Stephen Whittle, who was an early campaigner via Press for Change. He was born a female and transitioned to a trans woman. And he was invited along at quite late in the process to join discussions in 2007. This article, he says, it was important that it was not an official document of the UN, but at the same time, it placed within the UN a clear and accurate statement of the rights of people regardless of their sexual orientation, gender identity, or birth status. They have become almost part of the UN system. Often it is assumed that the YP came from the UN. They are acknowledged by legal experts worldwide as being a clear statement of human rights values for LGBTI people. Now, why did it happen? It's a very good question. But what we do know, and how we know it, is largely thanks to a report that was sponsored by Thomson Reuters and Dentons in conjunction with Iglio. This was a report produced in November 2019, all about good practice in legal gender recognition for youth. And what we've learned is that it is a very, very strong, strongly promoted and strongly followed strategy to stay under the radar. So we think, although we don't know, that the reason, Stephen Whittle says in this article, again, what has surprised me was how little criticism there's been of the principles. Well, nobody knows about them. hardly anybody knows about them. Hardly anybody knew that self-ID was suddenly going to be attached to equal marriage in Ireland. These are the tactics that are used over and over again by these gender identity campaigners to change the law, keep out of the press, and keep below the radar to get their agenda accepted. And one of our jobs at LGB Alliance is to constantly shine a light on the campaigning that has been done that is destroying the rights of same-sex attracted people, destroying freedom of speech for everybody, and destroying the lives of children who are growing up and told really complete fantasy instead of taught biology and the law at school. So we need to highlight YP. We need to highlight the fact that it is not legally binding. We need to highlight the fact that gender identity is a minority belief. And we accept that people can have beliefs. We accept people are protected for their beliefs. They should not be discriminated against. But gender identity is, in our minds, a fiction, and therefore it should not be referenced in any way at all.
It's really good, Kate, what you said. We think it's really important for people to understand that, even though the language of the YP says, for example, on page 7, the Joja Carter principles affirm binding international legal standards with which all states must comply. This simply is not true. The YP is more like a wish list. What I can say is that perhaps this sentence was included because, let's be clear, there are international standards related to sexual orientation. And I'm sure most of people would agree, for good reason, there's still so much to be done for gay and lesbian people's rights across the world. So yes, in that part it could be true, but not in relation to gender identity. So here we have minority view of gender identity hijacking onto the LGB movement. Now I just wanted to read something to you, very interesting, because it follows on from what Kate is saying. And this was a quote by Marson Davis, a transgender person, from the Transgender Law Centre. They were the director in 2013. Now, this person now is the interim director of Transgender Europe, which is one of the biggest, most well-funded organisations in Europe. And this is what they say about their tactics and how they have achieved so much. So they begin. We have to acknowledge that we have largely achieved our successes by flying under the radar. It is a secret at the Transgender Law Centre, and I'll come out today. We do a lot really quietly. We have made some of our biggest gains that nobody has noticed. We are very quiet and thoughtful about what we do because we want to make sure we have the win more than we want to have the publicity. And that has been largely effective. We're not the only one, and many organizations have done this, and we've been able to get a lot done. But I need to tell you that the days of doing things quietly are coming to an end. It's time to get ready for a close-up, folks.
So just to recap for people who are listening and perhaps not quite being able to believe their ears, So remind me again, when did the YP first come into being? What was the year?
2006.
2006. So we've essentially then, since 2006, had this stealth activism.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of creating some principles which are not legally binding, but talking about them in language that makes it sound like they are best practice, that they've got the seal of approval from the international community, and who could possibly object to them. So yeah. Really, we are seeing the incredibly successful culmination of this kind of stealth activism.
Yes.
And hence the acknowledgement now, as Fatina referenced, to the fact that the days of stealth are over, because we have now finally woken up to what's going on. I think obviously speculation about how we've got here and who's behind it is probably not very helpful, is it? Because we've all got some theories, but we don't.
Yeah, I mean, we can talk about the facts that we have, and we're happy to do that. But could I just go back briefly to what you were saying there, Sarah? One of the most successful tools of this whole movement, which we now don't use, is the language of trans rights. Because when you say trans rights are human rights, I think everybody agrees with that. And at LGB Alliance, we've always said that trans people deserve every respect under the law and socially, exactly the same as every other human being. And anybody who's an adult who wants to live their lives as close to living as the opposite sex, nobody should discriminate against them. They should be able to lead their lives as they wish. So we don't talk about trans rights anymore because they're not an issue for us. We support them. What we say is that the problem is that trans rights is used in a way that means something completely different. What it means is that woman is a feeling. Anybody can become a woman. It means that we have to no longer believe in biological fact. It means we're not allowed to express our opinions on biology. It means that children are going to be, many children, as we know, especially girls, are beginning to believe that they're trans. And we all know about the transing away the gays scandal at the Tavistock. So we don't talk about trans rights activists, and we don't talk about trans rights in our communications. We talk about gender identity campaigners. That is what YP is. It's a gender identity campaign to make everybody accept that gender identity exists and that self-ID is best practice. Now, this has achieved a mythical status, and we see this over and over again. Unfortunately, we saw it in Scotland. One of the YP activists has been very closely linked with the Scottish government and working on the campaign for years to introduce self-ID and lower the age to 16. It was our first campaign, active campaign, after we'd been working with the police and EHRC, but our next one was Scotland when we were 3 months old, and we were glad to be part of the campaign that pressed pause on that legislation. It's now been put into abeyance for a while. It will come back. But over and over again, we were told that the Scottish government was following international best practice. Now, what we want to do is to eventually expose what this agenda is. And I think it's time to talk about Principle 31 for Tina. But before I do that, can I say that this is not limited to Scotland. Many of the authors, many of the signatories of the YP have gone back to their countries, Argentina, Ireland, Australia, New Zealand, Pakistan, and have moved forward with legislation to promote self-ID. And these individuals have been incredibly successful, and we can learn from that. And when we come to the final part about what are we going to do, I want to refer back to that. But I just want to say for everybody who's listening, Liz Truss has been extremely clear that she believes, as we do, that anybody over 18 has the right to be whatever they want and to live a life with protection under the law. But she's made clear that she thinks the current process can be slightly amended, but that self-ID is not an option in the United Kingdom. It seems that Boris Johnson is wavering, which is why her statement was stopped in July. And I think the reason that he's wavering is that probably somebody has whispered in his ear, ah, what about international best practice? Surely we want to be a model of international best practice in terms of sexual orientation and gender identity. And given that he's got so many other disasters on his hand, I suspect that he may be listening to that voice. So our job is to shine a light, as I've said before, on the fact that best practice is to leave children alone, to accept that some people want to believe in gender identity, but that it has no existence under the law in this country and is a minority belief. But we were just saying that the YP plus 10 was even more extreme than YP original. And I just want to mention, what I want for Tina to talk about, this principle 31, which is off the scale.
We've talked about how the principles have undergone revision. Can you just help me and the listeners understand what's happened now then with the most up-to-date revisions? Why are you concerned about that? What's changed?
Well, we're concerned because they seem to continue to evolve and morph into something that we just don't even recognize in the realm of the rights field, you could say. For example, okay, so in 2006, the YP was cementing the idea that sexual orientation and gender identity belong together, even though they're two completely different concepts. And that was the key part of the original one. However, in 2017, the plus 10, so another 9 principles were added and some additional recommendations. So that's why it's called the plus 10. Now, in the YP plus 10, it calls on states to protect gender expression in the law and also sex characteristics. So you can see here again how things are developing into an ever widening category. For example, intersex rights has nothing to do with the rights of LGB people. Of course, intersex people should have rights, but intersex people have a DSD, a different sexual development. That's all. It's a different cause. So it doesn't really make sense to add sex characteristics. And as Kate just mentioned, we find the most troubling thing, one of the most troubling things, to be principle 31. And this demonstrates how far the YP is morphing and changing into something that is really very extreme. And principle 31, part A, calls for states to end the registration of sex or gender on official documents, including birth certificates. So they would like human beings to be born, but that the biology not to be recorded in birth certificates. Now, I just want to point out that we live in a world where we are governed by the law. It really matters how women and people are defined in the law. If the female category doesn't exist in the law, do females exist? Now, there's something else to be said about that as well, which is it could be argued that if you abolish recording sex or gender, you are effectively abolishing everybody's human rights. And we absolutely oppose and reject these extremely ideological positions. What's concerning is that not only has our very own EHRC, the Equality and Human Rights Commission, promoting the YP as international best practice. In their submission to the Scottish Government consultation, they say that they see the YIP as international best practice. But what we find odd is people don't even know what is contained in the YIP, and we're pretty certain that they don't know about Principle 31. It should be extremely alarming that our National Human Rights Institute, which is the EHRC, have a very special and powerful position, and they have some very important duties and responsibilities. I think the public would be shocked to find out that our NHRI is adopting and promoting such extreme ideas. And this is why we're speaking about it.
You've set down very clearly a really alarming and concerning crisis about the huge ramifications of all of this, coupled with really wide-scale ignorance on the part of the general public, but more importantly, our politicians about what this really means. Because Kate painted a very disturbing picture for me that we may have had Liz Truss making some encouraging noises, but if people are whispering into Boris's ear, as you say, come on, here's an easy win. You don't want to be on the wrong side of history. You want to be in line with international best practice. Then there's actually a real danger that this is going to become part of our law when it doesn't even have a legal basis to begin with. So my next question for both of you is this. I think you've explained in a way that certainly helped me to understand a bit better what we're facing. But what now can we actually do? Because they've got the march on us, haven't they? I mean, I think for many of us, my journey is quite similar. I mean, it was in 2015 when Stonewall added the T to the LGB, and it was about 2018 when it began to trickle into my consciousness that something really weird was happening. So we've got a lot of time to make up, haven't we? Do you have any hints, tips, tricks? What can we do to shine a light on this?
Well, the word is resist and shine a light. Don't let them get away with it. Don't let them tell us that something is best practice when it will in fact destroy half of humanity. We at the LGB Alliance, we're trying to help our supporters campaign more easily. This is a work in progress. I'm sorry it's not finished yet. But we will be adding a page to our website with template letters to MPs. We've just done one on the introduction of RSE into schools in September. That page should be ready by the end of this week, because the curriculum, everything's linked, the curriculum is based on YP. It's telling children of 5 years and up that they may have... If they don't feel very traditionally girly or traditionally boy-y, that's because they have a gender identity that may differ from their sex assigned at birth. So this, from the YP, is going into the heads of five-year-olds at school from next month. So our primary campaign is asking people to write to their MPs. Again, there's a lack of awareness. The full consultation of parents didn't happen, partly because of COVID. We did a populist poll in June that revealed that 76% of parents are not aware at all or are only vaguely aware of the content of the new curriculum. So take a look at our website, lgballiance.org.uk. Schools campaign, as I say, will be up this week. And then next week, we hope to have a similar page about YP and about self-ID. And a template letter again to MPs to say, whatever you do, support Liz Truss. Stand up for the rights of women. Stand up for the rights of LGB. Fight back against gender identity campaigners who are trying to change the law under the guise of best practice when it will be deeply damaging to at least half the population and probably more. So that is coming, but the one word is resist, stand up, speak. However risky it is, speak and say to people, this is nonsense. Sexual orientation is one thing, and that's all about LGB people. What is, ask questions, what is gender identity? And we found that one of the issues that we have with our opponents, for example, on Twitter, when we started, we were hoping that people would engage in discussions with us. But what happens is when you ask questions, there are no responses. And I guess the reason for that is that there's nothing there. The emperor has no clothes. So ask questions and resist, and I think we will prevail.
I think that's an excellent point, and it's no surprise, is it, to any of us, why the mantra, no debate, took such a firm hold. They didn't want to debate because they can't. There isn't anything that they can say. So I think my grateful thanks certainly to the LGB Alliance and all the other groups who have been standing there saying, the emperor has no clothes. We want a debate. We want a respectful, open, transparent debate with you as other human beings. Exactly. But you cannot take our rights away by stealth and threats. That we're not going to support. So, all right, a lot of us have been quite slow in the waking up, but I think we've woken up now. So very grateful thanks to our special guests tonight for helping part of that process. Do please visit the LGB Alliance website, the Fair COP website, Safe Schools Alliance website. Have a look at what Keira Bell is doing. We are waking up, and hopefully the courts are going to assist us. But I think there's no time for complacency. As I've said, they've had many years of, this has been many years in the making, and we need to start acting now. So really warm thanks to both of my special guests tonight. And I hope you listening now feel profoundly terrified, but also much better informed. And that's what will equip us best.
I'm very, very motivated.
Yes, yes. Motivation. Terror is often a good motivator. It is for me anyway. So hopefully motivation and enthusiasm will overcome the terror. So thank you very much again. And thank you for everyone who's listening. And write your MP.